This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in the show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by you. That is right, you listening and watching. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, 5-star reviews on Apple and Stitcher, shoutouts on social media, articles, mentions to your friends, IHU merchandise purchases, all make the show possible week in and week out. And for that, we love and thank you, homies. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, who is still socially distancing, and who is still down with the resistance.
And Akua, I didn't think of an intro, but my pronouns are she and her, and all that other stuff Sam said. So kinda, not really, maybe, yeah.
This is the Sam clone. Cool. Yes, every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about the racial impacts of climate change on black birthing people. Power play inside and outside the bedroom. How to date and practice self-love while you're black in a sea of whiteness. Some self-care tips on how to further your education, plus a review of Disclosure, a new Netflix documentary all about transgender depictions in film and television.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoUprising without the G on Twitter, at InnerHoUprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching InnerHoUprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. You can head over to InnerHoUprising.com to sign up for our weekly goodies such as our newsletter, to pay a ho, and to check out our merchandise.
You can do all those things up in there. If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, whether ridiculous or not, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email address is in the description of this episode. And we have the resident virtual workshop person here. Akua is in our presence.
Yes, and I love doing them. They bring me so much joy.
We're going to get into Ho of the Week now, which is a segment where we shout out the homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. And there is no prize awarded other than a pat on the back, a virtual pat on the back. All right, so our hoes of the week this week are the folks who paid some hoes. We got Michaela F, aka Willie, who paid a hoe and says, "Love you, angels. Thank you for your work and care." XOXO. Thank you, Willie. Then we got Stasia P, aka Stace, who paid a hoe and says, "Thank you for the great shows during this wild time." Thank you, Stace. We got Marley C, aka Sly, who paid a hoe and says, "Hi hoes, I hope you are feeling safe and loved in the time of the Rona. I'm a longtime listener, and this is the first time I've ever had stable income to have a little extra to give y'all. Your show has taught me so much, helped me unlearn, relearn, and question how I can make the world more comfortable for everyone by dismantling white supremacist patriarchal capitalism. The work you do is truly life-changing. Thanks for all that you do. Much love, Marley, aka now Sly." Oh, that was really sweet. Thank you,
Marley. Yes, thank you.
Then we got C Ring, whose nickname honestly has to be Cock Ring. I don't know what else you wanted from me, who became a patron. We got All Eyes, whose real name is Elise, who became a patron. And last but not least of the paid a hoes, we got Naomi M, aka Hey Macarena Ait, who paid a hoe. And you have to actually do the dance when you say Macarena's name. So
you do.
Then we got the people who gave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. Remember, if you want a nickname and you are leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, leave your first name so I have some fodder to make your name, you know, some inspiration to make your name. But we got Sacred Shame, who left us a 5-star review and said, "I'm so mad it took this long to find the show. 4 powerful people talking about the most real topics in a hilarious and brutally honest way. Subscribe right now. I wish I could give 6 stars. Wow, 6 stars is really, that would mean the world to us. I do want to note, Sacred Shame, you said 4 powerful women. So you might not be aware because it seems like you just started listening to this show, but we are 3 women and 1 agender person. Our co-host Rob is agender. They speak all about what it means to be agender on their episode 54, Genders or None, which I'll link in the show notes for this episode. But yeah, Rob is agender and their pronouns are they, them, and they do not go by woman, lady, or anything of the like. We also got The Dog Walk, who wrote, "My new favorite podcast. Thank you all at IHU for such an amazing body of work full of beautiful and practical info on sexuality. This is my legit new favorite podcast that I can't wait to support, recommend, and share everywhere. Thank you, IHU, for such great advice, inspiration, hilarity, and love." Oh, thank y'all for those reviews. Those were so sweet.
So sweet.
Yeah. Body of work. That's Look at my is, body though. Of work.
But that is what it is.
I love that. I got a banging body and a banging body of work. That's what I'm going to do when anybody tries to talk to me. Looking, I got a banging body and a banging body of work. So what do you bring to the table?
What do you bring?
Nothing. Nothing. Anyway. All right. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname, here are some things you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. Those are some non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these times, certain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. Please do not spend your last dollar on us. Put you and yours first, always and forever. Wow, everything's a song. Let me just stop. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/innerhouprising, or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise, the links to which are in the show notes for this episode and every episode for that matter. Also, we want to remind you that if you do become a patron on Patreon for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. The tradition now is that I'm reading things. I read a erotic Caribbean story last week, and that was so fun. At any patron tier, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early. Sometimes it's just a few hours early, but y'all always get it first. Sometimes things don't always work out, but y'all get it first regardless. And you can receive entry to our workshops, like Akua's digital workshops. Sometimes she'd be busting out Alexis.
Yes, the pocket and pussy Willie.
And Willie, the pocket penis. We got the pocket crew over there and our parties. So there is that. And now we're going to get into a segment that we like to call Self-Care Tip of the Week, which is where we give you some tips on how to care for yourself. And today, how are we caring for ourselves, Akua?
So today I want to talk about education and lifelong learning as a form of self-care and self-preservation.
Yay.
I was thinking, what is a self-care tip? And then thinking about the ways that I cared for myself in these unprecedented times, where I wasn't feeling my best. And I realized that I found empowerment in digging into, you know, my academic bag, going back and teaching myself, learning something. So I was like, that is actually one of the best ways to care for yourself. And I wanted to, you know, flesh out and talk about it. So continuing to educate yourself, continuous lifelong learning, has many benefits. Constant reading and taking interest in a wide variety of subjects is very likely to broaden your worldview, to help you acquire critical thinking skills and other life skills, to adapt those skill sets and to adapt those skill sets to maintain survival. At the very least. 2, competency builds confidence. So through continuing learning, you help yourself gain insights to build your self-concept or your self-image. As you're learning something new, it's a boost to the self-esteem. You're like, oh my God, I did that. I learned that. I accomplished that, whatever the feat may be. And that, you know, as a form of personal development, boosts our self-confidence, boosts our self-esteem.
Yeah. Feels good to learn.
Through continuing learning, you're able to make informed decisions about your lifestyle and choose healthier ways because you are learning more about your lifestyle, aka this podcast. You know, we teach you about one aspect of life that is very limited in learning in the beginning, and then you choose healthier ways of being. Mm-hmm. And lastly, but definitely not least, and probably not lastly, the list is endless, but I capped it very quickly for the sake of time. Continuous learning increases neuroplasticity. Mm. Neuroplasticity sounds like a very big word, but it just means the flexibility of your brain. So by keeping your brain engaged and learning new things, you are forging new neural pathways. It keeps your brain flexible. It keeps your brain active, which has been scientifically shown to stave off rapid cognitive decline and other, and you'll be less likely to suffer from forms of dementia like Alzheimer's. Wow. It is always why doctors are telling older people to do crosswords and such. You want to keep your brain alive and moving, and it keeps you up to date up there.
Wow.
So those are some of the benefits of continuing education at any part of life. Now, does that mean we all have to go to college? Nah. No, we don't got to go to college. There are so many ways to educate yourself. And typically when you hear that, people are thinking formal education, types of learning that are accredited by institutions and whatnot. And no, yes, that is one way, you know, to educate yourself, but it's not always accessible, nor is it always feasible. And what really happens is that we're always learning in informal ways and not being aware of it. So you can informally learn through reading, you know, picking books on a certain topics. People write about every and anything. For example, when I wanted to learn more about police brutality and abolishment of law enforcement or police institutions, I found a book on it. You know, I've been reading and I've been learning, you know, and being able to, you know, create a vision that I wasn't understanding or seeing before. You can watch YouTube. We joke about YouTube, but YouTube literally has anything that you ever want to see on it.
Everything.
If someone thought about it, they made a video on YouTube. You can fix your toilet. You can fix your car. You can.
One time I was like, do you think, I was talking to my friend, I was like, do you think like there's like how to cook crack on YouTube? And I typed it in and there was how to cook
crack. And there was how to cook crack. Look at that. Look at it.
Everything.
Like YouTube University is the university for all of us. It's semi-accessible. But yes, it is the university for everyone. You can learn from your peers through conversations like me and Sam have all the time. Yes. You can learn by trial and error, trying something and realizing, oh, shit, I did it, or no, shit, I didn't. You can learn through podcasts like ours. The list of informal learning, it goes on and on. There are different types of learning. So self-directed, where you can do like online courses that you can take at your own demand. So I'm doing one on ASL. I paid for it. And now I'm learning how American Sign Language on my own time. There are YouTube workshops, again, back to the YouTube, which are sequenced on like a certain topic. So there'll be different videos on a certain topic to help you learn it. Again, self-paced. There is professional learning, which is learning that you do as you pursue a part of your career. So updating your skill set and whatnot for whatever profession that you're in. There's personal, such as like self-help books or, again, me learning ASL. That's for no one but me. But it's something that I wanted to do. So it's something that I'm learning for myself. Lastly, indirect learning. Again, this is lifelong learning that happens without you knowing or planning. So you're listening to something, you're eavesdropping on someone's conversation, you're, you know, coming across all this information on the media that we're all spreading now, and you see a word or you see something and you then decide, oh, let me go learn more about that. You know, boom, now you're learning something.
I love it.
So that is my self-care tip, to actively engage in continuous learning, you know, and keep yourselves alive. Keep yourself, you know, abreast.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really good one. You reminded me how much I love to learn and I guess told me why I love to learn. You taught me why I love to learn. And now I learned something and now I'm like, oh, I feel happy. I'm like, oh, I get why I feel happy learning.
Look at it. Look at the cycle.
Yeah. That's so cool. If anybody's listening at home or wherever you listen and you're like, oh, this is something that I want to learn, or this is something that I've been learning lately, let us know about it.
Share, yes.
Share with us on social media. Hashtag Inarho Uprising or at Inarho Uprising and or Inarho Uprising. That was really cool. I will say on YouTube, just double check your sources. So like fact check what you are learning, because you might fall into a pit of misinformation and that's never good.
Yes.
Now we're going to get into a segment that we call Fuck That, which is our current events segment where we talk about current events in the world as they pertain to sex, love, dating, gender, feminism, all of those kinds of things. Today, well, we're talking about the links between climate change and, I guess, maternal mortality, right? Maternal mortality and also like their babies' mortality.
Yeah, so not the mortality or the deaths of the parent, but the effects on the offspring, on the children.
Yes.
So there has been a recent systematic review of research that has been published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA.
JAMA!
And this review was of 68 studies that have been done in the U.S. between 2009 and 2017. In this review, the researchers set out to evaluate the association between air pollution, which they categorize as fine particle matters, and ozone, which is a gas from car exhaust, gasoline, and fumes from factories and chemicals. Air pollution, which consists of fine matter particles in ozone, and heat or increasing temperatures, the effects of that on adverse obstetrical outcomes, so adverse birth outcomes such as preterm birth, low birth weight, and stillbirth in over 32 million births. A lot of births, right?
Yeah.
In the systematic review, what the researchers were doing were just looking over other research that has done. They were not conducting anything new. They compiled a source of all the research on this particular topic that has been done and organized them and evaluate them to see what are the patterns, what are the overall trends of all this research saying. And what they found is that the bulk of the studies showed that women, they use the term women, and I'm assuming because academic research or scientific research tends to be very binary. Mm-hmm. So they're categorizing everyone who gives birth as women, and more than likely the participants of all those studies identified as women.
Mm-hmm.
That is a flaw of science at this time. But the study showed that women who are exposed to air pollution and higher temperatures during pregnancy had higher instances of premature birth, babies with low weight, or delivering stillborn. Now, there's already been a substantial amount of studies that show that preterm, premature babies, and babies with low birth weight are also found to have higher rates of abnormal brain development or brain injury, delayed physical development, neurodevelopmental disabilities, an increase in health issues and medical needs, such as medication and hospitalizations, and an increase for special education services. And these effects are persistent into adulthood. So you're born with low birth weight or premature as a baby, and these negative effects can persist into adulthood, leading to poorer educational achievement, lower college attendance, lower socioeconomic status, higher rates of mental health illness. Mm. So these are the effects of being born premature or with a low birth weight. And it's been found that women who are exposed to air pollution have higher instances of premature births and babies with lower birth weights. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this pattern, how it affects, you know, starting from this one trigger, one cause, and how it affects the babies.
Right.
What they also found in this study was that Black women and women with asthma were disproportionately affected or disproportionately exposed to air pollution.
Yep.
So then I had to look at it because I was like, all right, people with asthma, let me see what the racial demographics of people with asthma are. According to the American Lung Association, as of 2017, that's the most recent of their data, Black people have the highest rates of asthma at 10 0.1% of the population, then followed by American Indigenous folks at 8.9%. Mm-hmm. Black people are 25% more likely to have asthma as compared to white people. So here they're saying Black women and people with asthma, but there's also that intersection of Black people having asthma. Like, they too are in that subgroup.
Right.
So what this overall study is saying is that this disproportionately affects Black birthing people.
Right.
This is such a big news story. This is such a big review because it just adds, it solidifies, you know, that Black communities, people of color, but specifically Black communities, and I'm going to add in American Indigenous folks because they're always left out, but we know that it always directly impacts, disproportionately impacts them as well, will be bearing the brunt of climate change. We talk about climate change and we always see these white faces as the forefront of climate change, but when we're talking about the effects of it, it is us. It is Black folks. You know, it is people of color. When I read this, I was just like, well, goddamn, here's another thing. Like, here we're adding to the list of the impact of systemic racism on Black folks. We're already at poor housing, poor access to health care, food insecurity, lack of access to healthy food, higher rates of health conditions like asthma, hypertension, diabetes, HIV, higher rates of maternal mortality, higher rates of postnatal deaths, disproportionate rates of incarceration, police violence, higher rates of intimate partner. Like, it's never ending. Like, it's never ending. And it's kind of like America wants to kill us.
Kind of.
Kind of. Like, it's just like, you know, reading it and seeing that they compiled all of these studies, which was only 68 studies, which don't seem a lot, but that is science as well. That is academia as well. There are a lot of under-researched things because people don't like to put their funding where it needs to go.
Right.
But in all of the research done on this topic in the U.S., the consensus is this affects Black mothers the most. Mm-hmm. You know, this affects Black pregnant and parenting people the most, and not just at birth. We already have studies and information that shows how this follows us through life.
Yeah,
and that's that.
That is some heavy shit, man. That is our experience in the country and the world, though. Some heavy heavy shit, heavy hitters, sorry, but I have so much music in my brain. But I'm glad that you did that segment, and I'm not glad that any of this is the case, nor am I surprised that any of this is the case. Whenever you think about anything, it's like that phrase that I'm sure people are hearing a lot now lately, but it's been a phrase for a long time: when America gets sick, Black people get the flu. Like, whenever you think about anything bad coming or that is going to happen, you just know that it's going to affect Black people the most. And when we get into the marginalizations of Black people within Black people, it's going to hit those marginalizations even harder. So this is just another subset of that. And climate change does not excuse that. When I think about climate change from the white point of view, I always kind of think about why isn't anybody doing anything, and why isn't this taken seriously enough? Because this is something that's going to impact us all. And when the world deteriorates to shit, it'll be like what people called coronavirus, the great equalizer. But then I started thinking about it further and thought, oh, it's actually not going to be the great equalizer, because people with access and privilege are not going to be hit as hard. And the same way that people were able to adapt and have their grand lives and pretend like coronavirus doesn't exist, is the same way that people with privilege are going to be able to adapt and still exist and lead fulfilling lives when climate change really starts to hit the fan. Although it's already hitting the fan, like all these babies are being born with like detrimental health outcomes and things like that. Or like there's like crop shortages in Africa because of drought, and like fucking Katrina happened, right? Like what was that, Sandy happened, and that like tore up Red Hook. That's in Brooklyn. That's like, it's a fucking drive away. Like, this is not anything that's new or anything like that. But what I was gonna say is that I'm glad that you covered this story at this time, and that study, what would I call it, like a mass compilation of studies and a review, report a review was released right now, because some of it is performative, but I think some of it is in good faith, as much as I hate everybody. And people are really like finding out ways that they can contribute to dismantling these systems and actually like affect change in regards to racial justice. And there are some white people and non-black people and even black people whose bags are climate justice. Mm-hmm. And now like fully seeing the picture of climate justice, I hope they take that information and go forward and like do the work that needs to be done.
Definitely. A call from the researchers and their conclusion was that those advocates for environmental justice, but specifically, you know, advocates for reproductive rights and, you know, medical practitioners really need to take this information and start to require or demand change from our elected officials. You know, we're in an age of the Trump administration who is constantly finding ways to repeal, you know, environmental laws and protections, you know, the things that they're allowing into law to happen, you know, regarding the environment and regarding climate change is very, very detrimental.
Yeah. I've been trying to do this thing on this podcast where it's, you know what the problem is, but how do you change it? Because if you don't have tangible ways to change it, you're going to be like, oh, that's bad. And then you're going to take a depression nap mm-hmm. and ignore it. What are some ways that you think people can further engage?
What really irritates me about the conversation on climate change is always the onus is put on us as individuals. Oh, recycle and crappity crap, crap, crap. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, this is the time, these are the issues in which I'm like, it really comes down to who we elect and who we give power. And that means taking ourselves down into our voting booths and whatnot and really championing candidates who are dedicated to climate change, who believe that it's real, you know, who believe that it's real, who understand the severity of the problem, and who are going to lobby and, you know, create laws to combat it. You know, I don't know how far we are in stopping or reversing, but to address it so that no further harm can be done. You know, there really wasn't much to say about what pregnant women can do, you know, besides protecting themselves from air pollution as much as they can. So, you know, during their pregnancies, finding spaces with air filters or spaces that are air conditioned to avoid heat waves and excess heat and things like that. But we all know that that also comes with the side of privilege and access, you know. You know, you can only do what you have access to do. So yeah, when it really comes down to climate change, I am very much for like finding and championing our potential candidates who will do the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, I think that's a really good entry point. I would also say if you are somebody who's like, I'm so called to organize right now and you have yet to find your organizational home and climate justice is your bag, you know, and you are like courting different climate organizations to maybe join and volunteer and like participate in actions and things like that, make sure that that place's tenants does include the racial effects of climate change. And like that they actually are calling for a policy that addresses that.
That's a good point. You know, there are times when I, as a mental health professional and as a licensed professional, are called to lobby for certain things. So like we'll get a mass email, or in my old job, we'll get a mass email about something that's on the ballot, some bill or something that's regarding mental health. And I always challenge all our mental health professionals to realize that there are factors affecting mental health, and it is all of these things. It's not just the person, it is their home, their access to healthcare, things like that. We have to count, you know, the environment. We have to count climate change as a mental health issue, if that is your bag, you know, as a medical issue, if you are a medical profession, as an entertainment issue, if you are in the, like, what, wherever you are, this affects it too. It's an issue. Remember it and, you know, and advocate and lobby for it. Talk about it. Share information about it.
Learn about it. Remember that from 10 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Cool. That was really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go into a segment that we like to call Fuck Me. It's about our romantic and dating lives. And my little sub-segment within Fuck Me is called Sam Presents Ass Media. That's a segment and it's a play on the term mass media. It's where I do book, TV, podcasts, film reviews, media reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. And they are typically spoiler-free reviews. This week, I'm reviewing a film called Disclosure. And I'm going to read the synopsis as the filmmakers wrote it. So Disclosure is an unprecedented, eye-opening look at transgender depictions in film and television, revealing how Hollywood simultaneously reflects and manufactures our deepest anxieties about gender. Leading trans thinkers and creatives, including Laverne Cox, Lily Wachowski, Yance Ford, MJ Rodriguez, Jamie Clayton, and Chaz Bono, share their reactions and resistance to some of Hollywood's most beloved moments. And then, why now? So the Disclosure filmmakers write, "We are at a crossroads as social movements are in direct conversation with Hollywood. Disclosure is the manifestation of this moment for transgender people and their representation. The increasing visibility of transgender people is exhilarating and signals the beginnings of positive social change. Nevertheless, violence against trans people persists, including the surge of efforts to constrain transgender civil rights, from current bathroom bills that paint trans women as male predators to a presidential military ban on trans service. There is an attempt to legislate trans people out of public life. Using history to illuminate the present, Disclosure explores this fear." So Disclosure is executive produced by the Laverne Cox and directed by Sam Fader. So obviously Laverne is a fucking icon. All the stand-up for Laverne forever and always, always and forever. That's the second time that came up. I don't know. Gotta do a karaoke night one of these days. But I do really want to take a moment to stan Sam. And it's not just because they have the same name as me. So Sam was one of my media professors in undergrad. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, learning from the best, Sam. Okay.
Like dead ass. And like seeing that they directed this just made me like reflect on my time in college and how much I really, really appreciated the media studies department and a lot of like the LACS department, which is Latin American and Caribbean Studies, WGS department, Women and Gender Studies, and the History department. Like, I actually am who I am today because of the foundation laid there. And I was like, oh shit, those 4 years really did mean something. Like, that actually helped me out to become the person, like the Sam that you hear today. Like, that is my foundation. So the Media Studies department was filled with like so many great media makers who intertwined social liberation within their work. And like, it showed me a way that I could intertwine social liberation within my media work, and literally everything that I've ever done in media does that.
Here we so are.
It's like, you really, sometimes you gotta see it to fucking believe it.
Yes, you gotta see it to know it's achievable.
Yeah. And just like the passion that they had for it, and it wasn't like no bullshit, like they really were just about it and good media makers. Fuck, that was such a good space. I took two classes with Sam, and they were extremely effective in helping me critically review media, especially as it pertains to gender and sexuality. They're a badass educator, and that really shines through in this documentary. Plus, they were chill as fuck, and I just want to say thank you, Sam. Whether you hear this or not, thank you, Sam.
Thank you,
Sam. I'm so proud. I'm so proud. This is not their first documentary. They're like a fucking world acclaimed documentarian at this point,
look at that.
I'm just so fucking proud. So my overall thoughts about Disclosure, I loved it. My one line take is that it was an extremely thorough, nuanced, and contextual historical look at visual media that depicts trans folks, analyzed from the perspective of trans folks only, which I think is super fucking important. Like, so good. It was an hour and 45 minute survey of depictions in Hollywood since the advent of film to now, like literally since the advent of film, like the silent talkies, like this type of shit, to like now, to like, oh, here's the second season of Post, like everything. Hey. So things that I really appreciated, I appreciate the fact that this is in, like, before I even watched it, it's in the Netflix Black Lives Matter section, which I have thoughts about that section, but there's just this trope or this common misconception that I think we're dismantling, but people still hold on to it, that all of the queers are white. Like, there's black people and then there's LGBT people. And let's not ever conflate those two things, because they're not the same thing. And by putting this category, Netflix was like, oh, they actually are the same thing. And this documentary also does a really good job of bringing in racial context in talking about trans lives, because they are intertwined and they're like historically intertwined, and they get into that in the documentary. Historically intertwined in film. I'm impressed by the amount of media that there is. I did not remember that, like, Bugs Bunny had moments of trans femininity, but that was a thing. And I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing. So there's Bugs Bunny, there's the old silent films, there's Maury, there's Jamie Foxx, there's Paris is Burning. Like, there's just so, it's a wide breadth of film. And I think that's like so important. And just like the fact that they achieved that in an hour and 45 minutes and it was actually like succinct and I got it was like, wow, yeah. Fucking, what is it? Throw in the kitchen sink? Everything but the kitchen sink or whatever?
Everything but the kitchen sink.
Yeah. I definitely think that cis people should watch this because you're going to learn something and it's something that you actually need to learn at this point in time. But just in like, oh, here are my interests. I think people who are into film and film history, this is right up their alley because it's like a review of media past and present. It always adds context. It's always contextual and it always digs deeper. So there's never like a surface level like, oh, this representation is good and this representation is bad. Like, always digs at the full breadth of what happened and what kinds of things surround the making of this or what kinds of things surround the release of this. So a couple of instances of that was the film Boys Don't Cry. Did you ever see that with Hilary Swank?
I don't know who that is, but no, I don't think so.
I'm fucking weak, bro. Hilary Swank is an actress. Boys Don't Cry is a film about a trans man named Brandon Tina, who was, I believe, killed for being trans. And in real life, Brandon Tina was killed and his friend was killed. His friend was a black man. And that actually happened in real life. And they talked about the fact that Boys Don't Cry was like a really good film in terms of featuring the story of what trans masculine folks do go through, even though it was really scary and like really like violent for Brandon Tina, but like this is an actual thing that happened. But in Boys Don't Cry, they took out the black guy. They just took the black guy out, and that man also lost his life. Yeah. And he was like a black man who was and I'm not sure what his gender identity was, but he was a friend to Brandon Tina. And like actually seeing that on film, it was in a documentary that was also about Brandon Tina's life. But for folks who didn't see that, like seeing that on film and like seeing the fact that Brandon Tina had a black male friend would be a little bit more breaking down of what I just talked about earlier, where it's like the blacks are here and the LGBT are here and it's separate. It's good that this film exists in a space where it's like we can say, oh, Boys Don't Cry was a really good film for this reason, but why didn't they do this for this reason? And always bringing back in race. Another instance of bringing back in the context of race is at some point Laverne Cox is talking about the historical context of black men being emasculated and lynched, like after slavery, and how that history has led us to or had led us to this trope of black men being in dresses and how that gets at the disarmament of black male masculinity. And like those two things can't ever be untwined in the society that we live in. But then there's also the fact that because of that trope and that being quote unquote funny now has led us to a place where trans women are the joke because they are quote unquote a man in a dress. Yeah. So like the fact that she like so thoroughly lays all of that out instead of just being like niggas in dresses is bad. Like,
yeah.
It's like everything around it that we need to know to actually fully understand problems. Like we need to know everything to understand stuff. Shout out to the fact that Akua said learn earlier today. That shit changed my life. Like, dead ass. What the fuck?
Glad that resonated with you.
Yeah. It's like something that's always on my mind, but the fact that you just said it, I'm like, damn, yeah. Learn. What the fuck?
And learning as self-care, caring for yourself.
Yes.
Learning to self-care be a better person.
And exactly, community care.
Community
like that shit
care.
Money. Y'all are some smart bitches, son. Why do I know so many smart people? Oh my God.
Anyway. That is my daily thought. But okay, let's go back.
Another instance of context and digging deeper, they talked about Paris is Burning, which I love that film. And a lot of people, that's a lot of people's intro to learning about black ballroom culture and things like that. And even Laverne Cox talks about the fact that she loves that film. But then they dig deeper and they're like, but that filmmaker was like exploitative of trans narratives. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can't unlink from this conversation. Like, yeah, we can love what Paris is Burning did, but we also have to talk about that and the implications of that when we tell trans stories in the future. just love context.
They were holding nothing back. They
it
were
really
like...
was everything but the fucking kitchen sink.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
The editing. So there are, because it's like a media review, it's a survey of media from like jump to now. And it's media about trans representation. So there's a lot of fucked up shit. So there's a lot of painful shit, violent shit, not just physically, like emotionally violent, things like that. Clumsy, just straight up fucked up clips that the cast is reflecting on. Like, that's pretty much the premise of the documentary. And after so many of the clips, they just like give a beat. Like there's just a pause. I'm not sure if there was a fade to black or maybe like a cut to black. But there's just like silence, like there's just like air. And I think because some of these things are things that I've seen before. Some of the things are things that I've seen in Sam's class, which was like, yes, you better make your fucking syllabus into a Netflix documentary. What? Okay. But so there are things that I've seen before. And I know that, or like, you know, when you just watch TV, you know what's expected next. So like, oh, here's the transphobic joke. And you would hear the audience laughter. Or if you saw that in a movie theater, everybody would go, oh, or laugh or whatever. Like, that's typically what would fill that space. And I like the fact that it gives silence and stillness to that, because it's removing that, just the fucked upness of it, and it's allowing for not only us to see how the cast is reflecting on it, but for the viewer to like just take that moment and be like, oh shit, yeah, that was like not good, that was very bad. Mm-hmm. They also transition between concepts really well. So just like talking about sexuality is an entry point for so many things in regards to under that umbrella. So I was talking about gender and transgender depictions. So this film really goes to a lot of different places, but they seamlessly do it. And there's always a through line. So you're not just like, where am I? Or it's not just like, now we're going to talk about transgender sex work depictions. Now we're going to talk about trans men depictions with like a title block or something like that. It's really just like seamlessly flowing. And that's really nice. I mentioned this earlier about the cast, but the cast and the crew are all trans. And that's just like, yes, do that. Do the fuck out of that. Do the fuck out of that, please. And I think it's so poignant in a film that is largely about narratives. Like, I saw that as a way to reclaim agency over your own narrative for the community and the community alone to tell their own narrative, because it's being done on top of narratives that have been told about them or that have been placed on them. So I really appreciate that, like, snatching back of agency. And I'm sure just, like, having, like, a transgender person holding the boom mic or a transgender person behind the camera allowed for a level of comfort and safety in telling these, like, such intimate and emotional stories and triggering stories. Yeah, I just think that's good. That's like good practice. Like, folks should feel comfortable when they're bearing their souls in this way. And also, it just makes for a better film, because like, you don't want to be uncomfortable that the fucking cameraman is a transphobe or anything like that. And then just, yes, employ trans people. What the fuck?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Bottom line.
The fuck? The cast specifically, there's a lot of moments and things that the cast brought up that I enjoyed or that I thought were well done. So just in general, there's mad people that I like in it. One of your former bays of the week is in it, Marquise Vilson. Remember him?
Oh, he's fine.
He is fine. And he was there with his fine self in the documentary talking that shit. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. There's a lot of people who I really enjoyed in there. In regards to their reactions, so there are actors who were the actors in some of these fucked up depictions, like some of these things that like beat on these same tropes and things like that. And those people are in the documentary talking about it and being like, yeah, like I wish they had not edited that way. Or I was just like lying on the floor when the scene was being played out. Like, this is so ridiculous. This is like not good. And it's good to see like the people behind those moments. Mm-hmm. And just, I don't think this was ever said outright, but like sometimes you have to do bullshit to get a check. And that sucks, but that's the fucking reality. Also, this film is nuanced as fuck, but there's like a lot of nuance feelings about media consumption. So there was one moment where they're talking about daytime television, and unless you're maybe like a Gen Zer, we all remember daytime television. It was pretty fucking bad. It was quite awful. Every other day on Jerry Springer, honestly, it was like a transgender story and a fucked up one. It was salacious. It was very exploitative. Not just Jerry Springer, but like regular, like Ricky Lake, maybe not Ricky Lake because she wasn't in this documentary, but like Ricky Lake, Jenny Jones, all those kinds of things where it's just like, okay, now we have a transgender person on and audience open for discussion. And the audience is like, where did your penis go? Do you have a penis? What is surgery? What's going on here? Are you a he or she or an it? And all that kind of like bullshit stuff. So the cast reflects on the fact that that felt bad and gross to see. But also seeing the people who were actually there, like the people who were being interviewed, and how they just like ate the interviews up with wit and grace and intelligence and pride and like shutting people down, like that allowed them to see themselves in those folks and been like that makes me feel good. So like that mm-hmm. nuanced feeling of I wish it didn't have to be in this space, but also I identify with you. Mm-hmm. Another thing more recently that provides nuance in how they're consuming media is like a lot of people were like, I disagree with everything that Caitlyn Jenner has ever said, but her show I Am Kate is actually a really good show for trans people because it's not just about her, but it has a lot of discussions that like advance conversations that trans folks talk about and deal with forward. So it's mm-hmm. like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll watch that now because I was avoiding that because I did not like Caitlyn Jenner.
I do not like her. Yeah, exactly. But now I know.
Exactly. There's one montage of the cast just giving Laverne Cox her flowers. And I was like, please do that.
Y'all better give black women their
flowers. Exactly. That shit made me tear up. I was like, yes, thank you. And then I was like, it's kind of funny because Laverne Cox is the executive producer. So what if she was just like, bitch, you better give me my... I don't think she wrote that, it though. In. Yeah. No. Give me my fucking flowers. But I don't think she did that. But that was just funny.
But even if
either,
she did,
either way, you deserve
your,
it. Yeah, either
exactly.
way, you deserve
demand
it.
Demand your flowers while you're here.
Exactly. The emotions of the cast are also very layered. And I think that is a testament to how well, like, the space crafted was and how good the interviewer was and just how well casted it was. So there's one moment where a cast member named Jen Richards, she's an actress and a producer, I think, actress, writer, producer. And she's speaking about seeing a father, it was actually on I Am Kate, seeing a father who loves and is in awe of his trans child and how that actually made her feel hurt because it reminded her of the fact that her family was never able to get to that point. And in some ways, she doesn't even view herself in the way that that father viewed their trans child. And I was like, that is like an extremely layered set of emotions. And it's even a set of emotions that I don't think I've seen depicted in a film or anything like that. And yeah, I think when it comes to trans folks and popular TV, it can become very like, yes, we're talking about the ills that affect us, but not the complexness of the ills. Like, just like, we dying out here, but like, mm-hmm. there's more to that. Like, it's not just, that's not the only thing that hurts. And hurt is not the only thing that is felt, you know? Like, mm-hmm. that is just such a complex thing where it's like you're happy for that child and the fact that the father feels like that, but you're also like lamenting on the fact that your family doesn't feel like that and lamenting on the fact that you don't even feel like that about yourself mm-hmm. in a world that's very like, well, you're either a victim or you're like a strong trans person who don't take no shit, but it's like not mm-hmm. just that. And I'm like, oh, that's really, it's very good that the film got into the layers of what people can feel. I thought that was really, really well done. The tone, like I said, the film never really goes into victimhood, in my opinion. There are plenty of sad moments because it's been a sad time. It's a sad country, sad world, sad life. But we never, like, there's parts where folks tear up, but we never see anyone break down and cry. And I like mm-hmm. that because that, to me, would have erred on the side of, victimhood. Like, victimhood. Yeah. And it's a good balance of, yes, we feel, and sometimes we feel sad, and we also want change, and we also don't want your pity. And it doesn't have to be pity to affect change. I think the music also helped with that because it was reflective and solemn, but also present and moving. Like, it was like a strong, like, solemnness, which is cool. Just like being in Sam's class, like, your hand is not going to get hold. This is the type of shit where you need to take some fucking notes. It's a survey. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of mentions of films, of moments in history, of historic figures, of terminology. And it's all present and there for you. And if you, like what you said earlier, where it's like you learn a term and then you do the research on your own, I think this film is like rife with moments like that. And then last but not least of things that I enjoy, it's not just all positive representation. Yay, the end. Like, it's not like that at all. So it does a very good job of distinguishing representation from structural change, which is the change needed to actually help people and save people's lives. It also explores how representation, harmful and positive, can affect how people engage with trans people, as well as policy that affects trans people in real life. There's a moment where, and I want to bring this up because I talked about the Title IX Supreme Court case last week, and I talked about the lawyer from ACLU who represented Amy Stevens and was largely responsible for that SCOTUS decision. So Chase Strangio is in it. I feel like I always pronounce his last name wrong. Chase S. was in it, and we talked about him last week, and he comes later in the documentary when they're talking about, yes, okay, representation was bad, and this is how representation has changed, and now that needs to morph into, or that needs to feed structural change, and that needs to feed policy change. And it's cool that, like, he's in it at the end, and this was debuted a couple of weeks after that decision. I'm sure this was filmed way before that, but it's like, oh yeah, here is actual evidence of that structural change that needs to occur. So I was like, ah, it's nice to see you again, man. Nice to see you after a week. But yeah, so it is a really good, it's honestly like the end is like a call to action, like something Laverne Cox says at the end is like, yes, you love us now. And she's not talking about everybody, because they also talk about the fact that strong representation of trans people can lead transphobes into wanting to enact more violence on trans people, which I think is an important point to make. But outside of those people, she's saying like, yeah, you love us on the silver screen, but like, what the fuck do you do for us off the silver screen? Is it going to be all of this energy and effort put into this one space, and is there going to be no energy and effort putting into like the space that really impacts us all? So that was a good like, do some shit the fuck. And then I just want to talk about some of the tropes that are mentioned, not tropes, but I guess like themes. Well, yeah, tropes that are mentioned and unpacked in the film. Some, but not all. So there's the murderous trans person trope, like in Psycho or in Silence of the Lambs. There's trans people being an aberration to feminism, which is one that actually didn't really click to me. But yeah, that do be happening in film and
TV.
Can
you give me an example?
So in The L Word, Pam Grier's character is talking to a trans man character who was introduced. I think his name is Max, but I don't remember. And she's talking to Max, and Matt, I guess, is like trying to talk him out of wanting to transition or going through physical transition. And her basis for that is like, you're giving up the one thing that makes you the best you. And he's like, what?
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, being a woman. And it's like, Pam Grier, could you not do that right now? Could you not fucking do that? And things like that.
Got it. Okay, got it.
There's just the general invisibility of trans men and non-binary people. There is, I think this one is like, I would love to see a documentary just about this in general. All these things, but about this in general, because it's so tangible right now in like pop culture. But the trans and sex work origins of the quote-unquote Kardashian look, or the hyper-feminine look. And just the fact that people, is it the same people who aspire to that look, be transphobic and anti-sex worker? What is your problem? It's because you don't know your history. Talks about sex work in general. Talks about victimization of trans people. It talks about health victimization of trans people. So like, I'm on hormones and now they're killing me. Like that kind of trope that happens in those medical shows. This part was really like just so fucked up to watch. Also, like, content warning, if you're a trans person and you want to watch this, I'm sure there are moments that are like going to trigger you. But the vomiting after it's revealed that a woman is trans trope, it's in so much shit, and it's like not funny, and just like
it's the fact that it's not funny, but also no one wants to watch someone else vomit. Like, all of it is just
all bad.
Why?
Yeah.
It's all bad.
It's all bad. Yeah. So much bad media out there. And then last, but not actually last, because this film talks about a lot, the daytime television body part sensationalism. So what surgery did you have? What is the process of the surgery? What does it do? How much did it cost? And all those kinds of things. And they really get back to the fact that it went back maybe like 60 years or something like that. Was this woman's name Christine Jorgensen? Yes, it was Christine Jorgensen. And she was a celebrity at the time, and they asked her those kinds of questions. And then it does like a montage of all of this sensationalism in daytime television. And it just reminds me of the fact that people say things like, I'm just curious. I just want to know what's wrong with asking questions. But it's like, y'all have been asking these same fucking questions about people's genitals for the past like 60, 70 years now. Can you shut the fuck up? Can you just do that? Like, why do you care that much? Yeah, so there's that. And a bunch of other stuff. I really recommend this documentary. We've been inundated with so much harmful bullshit, and this is a really good film that reflects on the harm, adds context in how the effects of this show up in the real world, reflects on alternate depictions that are showing up now, alternate positive depictions, and still urges all of us to do a whole lot more work because the work is far from done. So yeah, disclosure, it's on Netflix. It's directed by my former professor, Sam Fader. And check it out.
You have sold me, and I'm sitting here like, so when can I fit this in? Do I have an hour and 45 minutes? I'm sure I do. I gotta watch this.
You can watch it in pieces.
That is amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now we're continuing. Fuck me. Tell us about what's going on. I see that therapists are doms, and I'm curious. I didn't know.
So hold on, let me. I didn't know either, but so I was on Instagram scrolling as I always do, and I came across a clip by Honestly Nay.
Yes.
Where Nay or Shanae, who is a fellow mental health professional, an educator, and a sex enthusiast and a baddie.
Nay is fine as fuck. And that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. They were, it was a clip of an IGTV video where they were being interviewed or talking with someone else. And they said the words therapists are doms. And I had to stop. I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. And that's that indirect learning when you hear something and you're like, let's see. So they went to break it down. At first, when they said it, I was just like, no. Like my mind automatically went, no. But then, well, not no, but my mind automatically went to, no, I'm not a dom, because I know, like, I am a sub if I've ever met one, you know? Yeah. Like that is me. So I just, it just felt like cognitive dissonance. I was like, no, that I'm not a dom. Maybe other therapists are doms, and I'm not dom. But they went on to explain it, and I'm going to read part of their explanation because they also had this in a caption. So they went on to elaborate as therapists being doms as, one, we earn your trust. Two, you tell us everything that's in your head that you wouldn't tell anybody else. Three, they challenge people, take you to places you never thought you would go, or even places you don't want to go. Okay. Four, we provide aftercare. Five, you level up after the experience. You know, you've found a new height of yourself, a new level of yourself that you didn't know was there before.
Yeah.
And when they said that, I was like, you know, they made good points, but that it made me think about why I was so object to it. Like I thought about it and I realized that though I know and though I talk about it, I had this unconscious connection of doms as sadists.
Yeah.
That isn't real.
Yeah.
You know, that isn't always the case. And I had to unpack that for myself. And that led me into thinking about the ways that I engage in power play in and out of the bedroom, ways that I actually do without knowing it, engage in power play as a therapist. You know, it is very true that there is a power dynamic in therapy. Yeah. And, you know, any good counselor will address that head on and try to level the playing field, you know, as much as possible. But there is a power dynamic in therapy. And when I was thinking about it, that was the caption that the 5 points that they mentioned. But in the video, they were talking about, as therapists, we get this gratification from someone else's vulnerability. That's a little playish. Like when I set the whole scenario, you know, we have a session, we make you feel comfortable, we establish boundaries, and then we start to dig a little deeper, always checking to make sure you're okay, you know, bringing you to these deeper levels of vulnerability, these deeper heights of emotions, making sure that we don't hit a safe word, you know, making sure that we don't make you safe word, we don't make you, you know, back out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we do, we see that we provide aftercare, but also we have these time boundaries in our session in which we're bringing you deeper, we're engrossing you in the experience, you know, and then we start to wrap up and we bring you back and we provide aftercare. And I, as a therapist, find gratification when I have, I can't even put it into words right now, but when I have like led a client down, you know, a very vulnerable, there's a satisfaction when you feel how heavy, how deep a session is going with a client. Like there's an energy in there, you know, and there's this satisfaction afterwards when you've wrapped up and clients were like, whoo, that was something. Like it feels like sex. Like it feels like it's just like, they're like, wow, I didn't even know that about myself. Or I didn't, you know, like you go to these emotional heights and these, you know, these moments of vulnerability that are so deep, and in holding that mirror and those in that comparison, you know, to BDSM, I realized, yes, I am a dom in that kind of way, you know. And I never thought about it, because when I thought about power play and BDSM, I always thought of it in this, again, not knowingly, in this sexual way, mm-hmm. in this bedroom specific kind of way. And then in unpacking that and realizing that I did that, I realized, no, because there are parts of BDSM as a lifestyle that is not just focused on the sexual.
Yeah.
The sexual part. When we talked to the 24-hour slave, you know, the 24/7 slave, that is a, you know, that is a in and out of bedroom kind of thing.
Yep.
And I didn't realize how I had pigeonholed these ideas in these ways, though I knew logically that it wasn't that way. And I love when things make me think and really like dig deep into myself and realize that, you know, as I'm sitting here on this platform educating others, you know, with right information, I still have these biases that I don't even know that are there until they're unlocked. And then that spirals me into a thought about the way that I play and power out of the bedroom and out of my therapy sessions, apparently. But like, I have a thing, I've always had this thing of quote unquote culturally turning people out. Typically cis men, because they don't be knowing much. But like,
it's true.
I have this thing when I can introduce someone to something new. And again, it's this like, it's this feeling of bringing someone to this place, you know, being a source or the curator of this kind of pleasure or this new experience, this, I can't find the words to it. There's this gratification in this, you know, I did that for you, I brought you here kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I really just kind of went into this idea. I've really been thinking about power and in the ways in which I dabble in these power plays and these power dynamics in and out of the bedroom. And that was something. It was really mind-blowing to really get in there and see it. So yeah, that's where I've been.
That's cool. That's just really cool. As I feel like sometimes you gotta really see it to actually see it. So you mm-hmm. got it in theory, but you didn't actually get it in practice. And then you were mm-hmm. like, oh, I do this.
it was just cool. Mind-blowing for me.
Yeah.
And then that led me into my little piece of Black joy. So I've been, you know, in these unprecedented times, these now times. More than ever. you know, it's been hard for Black folk, me not, you know, not excluded for that. It's been a hard 2 weeks for me, and it really took an impacted my mental health. So in kind of getting out of that funk, I started watching Dating Around. And this was before I'm like 100% backed up on all of my podcasts. And now it's starting to give me anxiety because I don't got the time to catch up on any of them. You know, like even Bag Ladies, which is like 45 minutes, I'm at like 12 episodes behind. Oh, who got gosh. That much time?
Yeah.
Right? So, but I didn't know that you, Sam, had covered it last week. So I was watching it and I wanted to talk about it, and because I was watching it in that kind of critical lens, and everything you said was absolutely correct. Like
I'm glad that you want to bring it back up, because I have one uh-huh. critique on what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want me to say it now?
Yeah, I want you to say it.
I feel like I didn't give Deva enough credit because I was like, people don't talk about politics or whatever. And while she didn't talk about politics with that creepy bald man, The creepy Polly bald man. Or not give enough credit, but I think one thing that I eliminated from that, because I was like, oh, people just want to chill on dates. But also people want to feel safe on dates. And that was a really unsafe motherfucker. And so I totally understand why one would, if you don't know what I'm talking about, last week I talked about dating around on Ass Media. There's one person who's on a date with a man who is just very sexist and just very, like, he's kind of like power play where you don't consent.
Yes.
Kind of person. I could definitely see him being a sadist, honestly. All of those things. Not that sadists are bad.
Non-consenting.
Yeah, non-consenting sadists. But yeah, I think I should have said that sometimes people don't want to have these conversations on dates, not just because, like, I'm just trying to chill on a date, but also because this can be an unsafe situation. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time she just, like, what is it, like, give them their own rope? Like, she gave him his own rope to, like...
Yep.
Dig himself into a deep hole of the BS that he was saying, and that silence is also kind of stating your politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that.
Well, thank you for that. Yes. Mm-hmm. So yes, I agree with that as well. Everything Sam said in that, I was thinking, I don't know, I don't remember if you said this, but I feel like there just wasn't enough black on black couples, and I just feel like
that always bothers I didn't say that but I definitely thought it. It's like me rooting for the black person on Jeopardy or the black family or Family Feud. It's always like that.
It's always in me. So yeah, everything, you know, about the queer depictions, about the lack of fat people or disabled people, those are all my thoughts when I was watching it, and you covered it, so I don't gotta go there. But what I loved about, what I found was so joyful for me in watching Dating Around, because I don't do other dating shows, really, was that it fed my voyeurism in this way. So I am a voyeur, and I like seeing people in the moments that they don't know I'm seeing them. And the way that the show is depicted, that it's so romantic and intimate, this is, you know, it's like, it's really like looking into someone's date, you know, in a different way than you see on all of these other dating shows or relationship shows. And I also don't like other dating or relationship shows because it sparks the therapist in me, and that's just too much labor.
Y'all need help. And a lot of it.
But this sparked the voyeur in me. I felt like a fly on the wall on these intimate dates. They didn't know I was there. And it also hit at the hopeless romantic in me. Like, I just love romance. It was just so cute. And it made me realize that I love the dynamics of dating. I really enjoyed when I was dating. Like, there is something about, and this might feed back into the power play, but there's something about witty banter and getting to know someone and, you know, the things that are depicted in the show that really get me. Like, it made me, like, the shows would start with, like, watching the dater, like, getting dressed. Like, all those little details about dates used to excite me. Like, I used to love picking what I'm wearing and where we were going and talking over drinks and all those things. So it really brought me, it really reminded me of all those things about dating that I liked. That courting culture, and that brought me so much joy. I really enjoyed that. I didn't realize how much I enjoyed that, but I really enjoyed that.
I liked it too. I think I was like, do I miss people finally?
No.
That's
you don't.
But I do miss dating, like, that aspect of it.
I have a question though. Is it scripted?
I don't think so.
Like, is it real?
Well, one thing, because this is coming from a former professional wrestling stan, so real or not, I actually don't really care. Like, I just feel good watching content. Like, content is content. I didn't really go into depth about it. Like, sometimes I'll be like, oh, okay, how is production of this reality show like? And what is production of this reality show like? And I know in other shows, like Married at First Sight, for example, like, the couples will have an issue, but when it's, like, time to film, production will be like, okay, what was the issue that you were having? So it's, like, staged in that way, but not staged in that this is something that they just came up with out of their ass. So, I don't really know. I don't know if it's, like, how about you guys talk about this or anything. there's obviously like some elements where it's like, oh yeah, we're the exact same thing for four different dates so that we can edit this well.
Yes. That or that
pretend,
was the
pretend
thing
like that... you haven't been here before. Like there's those elements that are
that was what had sparked that. And then like their seamless editing, that editing was just, I was like, does Sam do this? Like where the
it's
fuck?
It's very fucking good. It's extremely
how did
good.
Y'all do that? Yeah. Like absolutely seamless. But because of the editing, like they would catch parts for certain dates. For some people, you could see that this was just things that came up and they were talking about it and they found the commonalities and pieced it together because, mm-hmm. you know, they're good at their jobs. But some of it just seemed like, are you having the same conversation with every date? Like, how did we get here again?
There's that one Dominican girl at the end who told everybody that exact same story about her boyfriend or whatever, or her not boyfriend. It was the exact same story. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think it was fake. Like, I thought she just, you know, there'd be some people who like to tell the same story over and over again. That's what I took from that. But I don't know. Maybe.
And I asked, is it real? Because the voyeur in me needs to feel like it's real, like it's actually real. Like once it feels like, oh no, this is fake, then I'm not enticed anymore.
That makes sense.
But outside of that, you know, I told myself, you know, real or not, I really just enjoyed this different depiction of dating that I haven't seen, you know, on TV or in media. And it really brought me so much joy and really, again, helped me jump down this wormhole of learning about Akula in these ways.
Yes, learning. Wow.
It's the key word here.
Is that the name of this episode? Fuck. Well, I'm going to do some research into the production of this. If I find out that it's totally fake, do you want me to ruin it for you?
Yes, you have to let me know. Right. That's why I asked, because I was hoping you would tell me.
No,
you have
not
an
this
answer.
Time.
Tell me.
Yeah, I don't have it this time. The most I did was like look at people's social media, and I'm like, oh, that's nice. You're having a life. Yes, I will do research into that. But thank you. I'm so glad that you're finding joy.
Yes, thank you. Things. So.
We're going to get into the last segment of the day, and that segment is called Fuck You. It's about your sex, love, and dating lives. It's the segment where we read your listener letters. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns, also because we are in the future. You can leave us a voicemail. We'll play it and respond to it on the show, so you can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. That is 404-491-9158. That and the email will be in the show notes. And now we have a voicemail from Kat, whose pronouns are she and her, and it's about being Black in a white space and many other things.
Hello, hello, you wonderful, beautiful wild hoes. My name is Kat and my pronouns are she and her. I am calling in because I just want to say thank you to all of your advice that you've given me in previous episodes, and I've also emailed you guys in previous episodes, and you guys have been so helpful. I just wanted to ask, I'm very young and I'm finding it very hard to go out through my day and just be in my own body. I am a Black young woman who lives in Arizona, and I'm just finding it that I'm not attractive to any of the guys here. And, you know, it makes me feel some type of way. I want to be desired at some point in my young career as a person, but I also find it funny because I work with a lot of other young women as well, but they're white and they brag about these, you know, we would call them hotels, but me on the other hand, I have nothing to brag about. And I'm just like, well, shit, I want to have fun too. You know, I want to have a demon summer, a savage summer. But, you know, Miss Rona had other plans, but even before that, I don't think I was really introduced to any of the things that they're talking about, and I just feel so left out. And, you know, I was able to talk to my parents, who are really open about sex and everything that has to do with sex, and just letting them know how I felt, and they more or less said, like, oh, you know, wait your time, it's not all what you think, like, you know, you don't want to, you don't want to be the loose girl, that people just don't want to be around. And that's true. I don't want to be that way. But I wanted to know if you've had any information, any advice for a young Black girl living in a white society and who feels unvalued and undesired by guys in her age range. And if you don't, that's fine. If you want to give me some helpful tips to, you know, start exploring and seeing what I like about my own body, that'd be great too. Love you guys.
Love you too. And thank you for writing in.
Yes, thank you, Kat.
I wonder what was playing in the background.
I don't know, but I was jamming to it. I was like, I didn't hear this before, and I listened. Wait a minute.
Cool, you had some things to say.
So in listening to that again, I'm not sure if Kat said that they aren't attracted to the men around them or if they don't feel attractive to the men around them.
I listen back a couple of times for that also. My understanding is that they don't feel attractive because mm-hmm. right after that they had said, like, I want to feel wanted to or something along those lines.
Yes. And that's what I thought as well. So Kat wants to know, how can she as a young Black girl living in a white society feel valued and inspired by guys in her age range? I felt stumped, but the things that readily came to mind was, one, find you a Black community. Find you a Black bubble.
Somewhere, yeah.
Somewhere in, did it say where they were?
Arizona?
In Arizona. Somewhere in Arizona is some Black folks that are for you. If I was in that
situation. Or some brown folks.
Oh, yes, or some brown
Remember
folks.
Remember when we talked to Kiawi, they be doing this wild party in Tucson. And I'm still, Rona fucked it up, but me and Akul was about to go to Arizona, son. That seems like a really just good.
It seemed like a good time.
Yeah, just a good, like, Black, indigenous, brown, good-ass time. So yes. I know that is proof of concept at the very least.
So find you that community. Find you a community of people of color, Black and brown folks, because that's what I would do. I wouldn't be messing with them white people anyway.
Yeah, fuck them. And not fuck them like have sex with them, just like fuck them.
Yeah, like no, I keep my distance around them. And being around, again, we go to representation, like being around people, seeing, you know, people like you helps to build your self-esteem. That is the very basis of what we mean about representation, you know. So that is a great way to start building up our self-confidence, our self-esteem, and our self-value, you know, finding your community, feeling like you belong, and the white people ain't it for you.
Those white people aren't it. I'm not like saying pander to whiteness or anything like that. Y'all know who I am. But like if you, because you said you're young, you might move to different parts of the world or different parts of Arizona. You might encounter white people who are it for you mm-hmm. and like a healthy it for you, not like fetishization or like you have to fucking beg for them to find you attractive or anything like that. There's just like white people who you might be into and who are into you in a good way. So this is mm-hmm. not like the only community of folk.
Yes.
In the entire country or world.
Well said. Well mm-hmm. said. Second is masturbation, my most favorite thing in the world. Like, in the moment, in the time that you want to know, you want to learn more about your body and what you like and exploring yourself, that's the way to do it. Masturbation. That's it. That's all I got. masturbation, but also I wrote down body worship, worshiping your own body in the nude and in clothing, in, you know, sexual activity and in normal physical activity, you know, reaffirming your body for yourself, how it moves, how it looks, how it feels. All of that also helps to bolster our self-esteem and our self-value. And that can look anyway. That can be nudes. That can be staring at yourself naked in the shower while you lotion. That can be setting up an OnlyFans page. Whatever makes you happy. That can be
thirst traps on Instagram.
I was just about to say, that's literally what I was trying to get out. Thirst traps on Instagram, like, and any and everything in between. So yes, body worship. And then identifying what you want in your sexual life. Sometimes we can hear the sexual going ons of other people and say, I want that, but do we, or do you just want something going on for you? You know, what What do you want sexually for your life? And then finding ways to pursue that, you know, it might not be these hotels that these white girls have, you know, it could be something completely different. Figuring out what that is and then moving forth in that, finding community, finding space, finding other people in, you know, in your sexual desires. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
Those are good tips. You always come through with the good tips. To build on that, I would say if you can't physically, because I don't know what your, well, I actually do know what your physical constraints are. There is a pandemic. Forgot about that. But if and when that stops, mm-hmm. I'm sure you might have other physical constraints like, oh, you go to school here. Because I think there was another person in Arizona who was like, what is going on in Arizona? This is like the second Arizona question. And I feel like it was a similar inquiry, but, you know, you might be going to school somewhere or you can't traverse or whatever. But there are like online spaces, you know, maybe when mm-hmm. like Rebecca comes back on for her next episode, she can talk about this. But she's into like a lot of Facebook groups, like a lot of Facebook groups for specific things. I'm looking at my plant right now, so I'm going to say the plant growers, but that was just an example. Mm-hmm. But it's not just like the plant growers, it would be like Black plant growers. So you can find Black mm-hmm. people who are into the same kinds of things that you are. And honestly, I don't participate in those groups, but niggas be getting freaky in there and people can't play. So like people be finding their bays, their online bays in spaces like that. So like definitely don't shut off online communities. That includes Facebook. That includes Instagram, Twitter. People have Twitter bays all the time. There's a lot of spaces mm-hmm. to find community that aren't necessarily right there in your physical location. And mm-hmm. then you did say something about your parents saying you don't want to be that loose girl who everybody shies away from. I don't really know what you meant by that.
Yeah, I didn't.
And because it was so fleeting, I'm not sure if you knew what you meant by that. But I will say, you know, I know you listen to the show. I know you're like probably a sex positive person. But like what Akua said earlier with like the disconnect, like, oh, I knew about BDSM this way, but I didn't like fully unpack it this way. You might be harboring onto some internal like slut shameness mm-hmm. or some ho-phobia. So just think about that a little further. Like what do your parents mean by that? And what do you mean by that? Because mm-hmm. The loose girl, I don't shy away from the loose girl.
I fucks with the loose girls.
So, I'll be ready. If you do not want to be a person who is having a lot of sex often, sure, mm-hmm. that's fine for you not to feel that way. But I'd also question saying loose girl as a pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah, I heard that the first time I listened to the voicemail, then I heard it again. I was just like, I don't know what that means. So I just then cut it out. I was like, all right, I can't. I can't unpack that. My brain said, snip, snip, the end. But
That brought me to what I just said. But before that, it brought me to this one moment in Degrassi where Banny is like coming into her sexuality and she wants to be a model. So she's thinking about getting breast implants. And I think her dad finds out and he's like, what kind of girl wants to be a loose girl, huh? And it just reminded me of that very iconic Degrassi moment. Shout out to...
I do remember that.
Shout out to Joe Santos for... shout out to Degrassi in general. Anyway.
Ooh, sure. That was some formative years for me. Ooh, sure was. Some formative years.
Oh, man. No, what did he say? What kind of girl wants bigger boobs, huh? A loose girl? No, girl. Maybe he said a good girl. Whatever. Shout out to Joe Santos. But not really, because he's being very sexist and just mean to his child.
I think it was Sanchez.
No, it's definitely Manny Santos.
Santos?
Yeah, it's Manny Santos.
Okay.
Manuela Santos, class of 2017, Degrassi. Wow. Anyway, we're old. Anyway, if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. That's with the G. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community, CUMMUNITY. You can head over to InahoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, to pay a hoe, and to check out the rest of our merch. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl. That's HEYYAKUAGIRL.
Yes, and you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego for travel and food photos. If you're on YouTube, you saw me do this, and it was because I was scratching my ass. That is where we'll leave you for this week. Goodbye.
Bye.